Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kuf Yud Tet Amud Aleph. Mishnah says, Haisha shalach bala v'tzarata l'medinat hayam, a woman whose husband and her co-wife traveled overseas. Vamrula made balech, and then she gets word that her husband passed away. Now, as far as nemanut, we know that a single aid in these situations can be believed, and she should be released because of that. Our problem is that we still have the tzara, we still have the co-wife in the picture, because the co-wife accompanied the husband. That means that there's a possibility that this co-wife is pregnant, and that would cause a problem here. And that's what the mission says, lo tinasei velo tityabem. She cannot get married, meaning that she's not released over here, because there's a fear that the tzara did not have a child, and that means at this point she is chayavet in yibum or chalitza. On the other hand, we will not allow her to perform yibum, because there's a risk that her co-wife is pregnant or will have a child, and that would be poter her from the need for yibum over here, and she would actually be bogea be'eshet achiv, which is an isur karet deoraita. So ad sheteda shema mi'uberet hitzarata. Until she clarifies or gets the information as to whether her co-wife is pregnant, we'll see in the Gemara what that means or how much time has to elapse in order for us to make that decision. Haitala chamot, if she has a mother-in-law, eino chosheshet. She doesn't have to worry about this. Meaning that if she has a mother-in-law that went overseas, and as far as she's concerned, she does not have a yavam when her mother-in-law went overseas, she does not have to then be choshesh that her mother-in-law had another child overseas, which is actually a yavam, and therefore she is chayevet in yibum. We don't worry about that scenario. On the other hand, yatzta mle'a, if she goes out mle'a, mle'a here means full, she is pregnant, chosheshet. As Rashi points out over here, yatzta mle'a is if her mother-in-law went out pregnant, then we are chosheish that there is a yavam over there, and the Gemara will discuss why. The term yatzta mle'a seemingly means that she is towards the end of her pregnancy, because the Gemara does not entertain the possibility here of a miscarriage, and therefore it's most likely, according to the Rishonim, that they suggest that the mle'a here means towards the end of the term of pregnancy, so that there is only a safek as to whether there was a male or a female born, and that's a 50-50 shot, and because of that, we will be chosheish that she does have a yavam. Rabbi Yeshua Meir, eno chosheshet. Rabbi Yeshua says, even in that case, we do not say, or we're not chosheish for that possibility. As Rashi says, because the ikal meimar shema hipila, there is a risk that she miscarried. Now, the risk of a miscarriage is a real probability, and if Rabbi Yeshua is correct, then the chachamim should also be chosheish for that. So that's why we suggested before that the situation here is where she's towards the end of her term of her pregnancy, and therefore the likelihood of hipila, of her miscarrying, is very low. And that means that you've just moved the odds into a probability if the person dies normally or doesn't die. And in that case, we're not generally choshesh that people die, we assume that they will live. And because of that, chachamim don't consider that possibility of hipila, because Rabbi Yeshua still considers that small probability of hipila, in saying that we do not have to worry about the fact that there's a yavam, because if you're mitzareif, if you join together the risk of either miscarriage or the possible infant mortality, together with the possibility that it was a female, which is 50%, or a male is 50%, then ala rov, it's not someone that she is chayevet in yibum with, because it'll either be a nikeva or a passed away. In either case, then she does not have a requirement of yibum that individual. The minority would be a case where it's a male that should be chayevin in Yibum for, and that's the position of Rabbi Yoshua. Mar says, Maihi Tzarata. What is meant in the Mishnah when it says, the language is strange, extraneous, as Tosafot says, Shema mi'uberet hi Tzarata. Why don't you just write, Shema mi'uberet Tzarata? Why does it use the word hi over here? Hakamash Malon, Laha Tzara hu de chayshinen, La Tzara achrite lo chayshinen. It comes to teach us that we worry about that co-wife that he went overseas with, but we do not worry about the possibility that he took another wife when he went overseas. So, in terms of her considerations here, her husband passed away. She knows there was a co-wife before he left. That co-wife, she has to worry about whether she was pregnant or she had children. Other than that, she doesn't have to be chosheshet as to whether there was another wife taken overseas and then all the complications that arise from that. And that's why the Mishnah specifies hi tzarata. Only this co-wife is what she has to consider. She doesn't have to consider any other possibilities. Lo tinasei velo tityabem. We say about this woman, she's not allowed to get married. She's not released to the shuk, but she also cannot perform yibum. Bishlama yuvume lo. We understand why she cannot perform yibum over here. The dilma me abra. Because maybe her co-wife is pregnant. Bekapaga veishet ach doraita. And then she is in violation of the isur of eshet ach, midoraita, because there was no yid for yibum over here. Elalotina say amai. Why can't she go get married to a third party? Haleich acharov nashim. Let us go after the majority of women. Verov nashim mit abrot viyodot. Because most women become impregnated, and if they become impregnated, they give birth. So the assumption is that if this husband went overseas with this woman, in all likelihood, they did have a child together. And if that's the case, she should be released from Yibum. Why is it that we hold out on her and say, oh, we need to check this out? Mar says, Lema Rabbi Meir he. Let us say the authorship of our Mishnah is attributed to Rabbi Meir, the Chayish Lemiuta, because Rabbi Meir worries about the Miut. There is here a minority or a lower probability, the possibility that there was not a child born here. And Rabbi Meir's Choshesh for that Miut. And that Miut will prevent her from being released to the Shuk, because we have to worry about the fact that possibly there was no child born here. It says, Afilu Teimer Rabbonon. Maybe the Rabbonon can even be the authors of our Mishnah. Ki Azle Rabbonon Bata Ruba. When do the Rabbonon say that we go after the Rove? That's Beruba De'ita Kaman. That's when we're talking about a Rove that is in front of us. I mean that all the information here is present, and now we're trying to make a decision based on that information. Kagon. An example of that is Teisha Chaniyot V'Sanhedrei. It's like 9 butcher shops in a city that are kosher, and 1 butcher shop that is not kosher. We find a piece of meat in the city, you can assume a la rove it came from the 9 butcher shops that are present in front of us, versus the 1 butcher shop that is not kosher. Same thing with Sanhedrin. When you are voting to decide or make a decision within the Sanhedrin, if the majority say that the person is innocent, then we go after the majority. The Pasuk in the Torah says, Acharei Rabim Latot. Tosafot actually asks that, what does Rabbi Meir do with that? He has to deal with that. In addition, he says we never find that Rabbi Meir actually argues here in Teisha Chaniyot or Sanhedrin. He doesn't argue in these cases. But Tosafot just says these are examples. It's not necessarily proof that Rabbi Meir argues in these particular situations. Ava ruba de leite gamando azle rabbonon bata ruba. But once we get to a robe that's not in front of us, we do not go after the robe. Now, what does that mean, a robe that's not in front of us? That's a robe that deals with the probability of an occurrence or something happening in general. For instance, what's the probability that someone's a lefty versus a righty? What is the probability that a child born is a male or a female? So on and so forth. These are probabilities that don't have to do with the issue in front of us. It's not something that we can assess right in front of us, but it's a general probability that deals with the world at large. And that's a ruba deleta kaman. The Gemara's assumption right now is that there'll be a difference between a rove where we have all the information right in front of us and we can count the rove versus the miut, versus something where the rove and the miut are generalizations of probability. Now, this might have to do with the nature of how rove works. You could argue over here that the difference is when you have a rove and we say acharei rabim latot, what type of psak halacha is that? Does rove come along and therefore is machriya for us the halacha? The object remains a safek, but we need a mechanism by which to decide the halacha, and that's what rove does for us. Or, on the other hand, you could argue that rove works this way, which is that it's koveya on the mitziyut. It tells us what this object is. This piece of meat that is sitting in front of us. Is it kosher or not kosher? The mitziyut is kosher because the rove tells us that it's kosher. And therefore we will decide that it is kosher. Nothing to do with hakra halachically, but that is the actual status of this piece of meat. Not just halachically, but that's how we're going to look at it in mitziyut. And that might help to explain the differentiation that the Gemara is trying to propose right here. Maybe with the rove that's kaman, the rove that is right in front of us, over there, the rove is koveya the mitziyut. And there, it's as if the miyut, or the minority, does not exist at all, because it determines for us what the status of the object is. On the other hand, when a rove is not kaman, and we're working with probabilities, over there, the rove is utilized as a hachra, a way to decide halacha, but it's not a way to be koveya the mitziyut, the absolute status of the object. And that's why when it comes to a rove that's kaman, the chamim don't deal with the miyut at all, because the miyut is as if it doesn't exist. On the other hand, the rove, the letekaman, the general probabilities, over there the miyut still exists. We will be machriya letzad a rove, but the miyut still exists, and therefore maybe we are choshesh from miyut in that case. The Gemara is going to say that the Rabbanan don't hold like that, but the principles that we just spoke about might be relevant even if the chachamim don't say that, and that is, v'harei katanuk tana, the case of a katanuk tana that have yibum or possibility of yibum, deruba deleta kamanhi. That's a case where we have no idea about the exact status of this child, whether the katan or ktana. We know that in general, if I look at the world and the probabilities in general in the world, a katan will grow up to be an individual who is viable in producing children. And the same is true to the ktana, that she'll be viable in carrying a child and giving birth to a child. Vazir Rabbanu Bataruba. And the Chachamim go after the rove over there, even though it's not in front of us. Detanya, we have a braita. Katan miktana, lo chotzim, velo miyabmim. They don't do chalitza, and they don't do ibum. Divri Rabbi Meir. So Amrulo, the Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim said, Rabbi Meir, yafeh amarta shein chotzim. We understand why you don't do chalitza, because ish tiv baparsha. In the Torah it says ish, which is a demand for a person of age to perform chalitza. So therefore, a katan cannot perform chalitza. Umakshinan isha de ish. And we have a hekesh between the woman, the yavama herself, and the ish, and the katan here. And therefore, just like by the male side of the chalitza process, he has to be of age, so too she has to be of age. So I understand why you can't have chalitza. Ela matam in miyabim. Why can't they perform ibum over here? Amalem katan, shema imatse saris. Maybe it'll be found to be impotent in some way. Tana shemetimtza ailonit. And the tana, possibility that she's unable to bear children. So here you have a problem where there's a possibility that these people are not fertile. Benimtzu pogim be'erva. And then in that case, there is no reason for ibum. The chachamim say, we'll go after the rove. The majority of the people, the probability in the world is that these people are fine, and they're healthy, and they're able to reproduce, and therefore there's no reason to stop them from performing ibum. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir, who's choshesh the miut, says we are worrying about that here, because there is this miut, there's this minority that we worry about, and that minority we have to deal with. And then being choshesh the miut says that we have to worry about the possibility or plausibility that they're not productive. And if they're not fertile, they are asur to perform ibum over here, so we won't let them get married till we determine whether that is the case or not. But Rabbanan Savri, on the other hand, the Rabbanan believes zil bata ruba diktanim, rob tanim, lav srisa ninu, go after the majority of children in the world, and majority of children are not going to grow up to be people who are impotent. Zil bata rob tanot, and you go after the majority of young females in the world, rob tanot, lav ailonit ninu. And again, the assumption would be that the majority of girls grow up to be productive and childbearing women. So if that's the case, the chachamim are not choshesh the miyot in either of those instances, not when it's a rov likaman, and not when it's a rov shalo likaman. It must be that Rabbi Meir is the author of a Mishnah and that he's choshesh the miyot. We will discuss this further because it's not so simple. Now we have a stam Mishnah that's like Rabbi Meir, and yet as Tosafot points out, we don't paskin like Rabbi Meir that we're choshesh the miyot. So how are we going to reconcile the fact that the Gemara here is establishing the Mishnah like Rabbi Meir? And on the other hand, that we don't paskin like Rabbi Meir. In addition, what I mentioned before, the difference in rove might actually have impact over here, which is that the chachamim agree in both instances we go after the rove. In the case that it's lekaman, we go after the rove. But over there, the hachra of the rove is that it changes or tells us the status of the object. On the other hand, when we talk about general rove, over there we're talking about probabilities. And in the probabilities, we use that for hachra, we use that for making decisions halachically. But that doesn't change the status of the object. And because of that, there might open up the possibility that miut, by the case of ruba deleita kaman, can function with other principles in halakha to join together then to cause an issue, which we'll see in a second, versus the case where the ruba kaman, when we're doing a rove that's right in front of us, the miut is kaleita dami. It's as if it doesn't exist whatsoever because we've determined the status of the object. We're not just making a halakhic decision. And so therefore, even the maskana, where we say that the chachamim think that rove is koveya, both in kaman and delo kaman. Nevertheless, the nature of the miut might be different. And in the case of kaman, the miut may not exist at all. Whereas in the case delo kaman, where it's not in front of us, the miut may still exist. And because of that, they will utilize that miut in certain instances to change the halachic outcome. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir is clear here that he's choshesh the miut. And it might be that he's only choshesh the miut in ruba deleita kaman. Only in cases when we're talking about rove that deals with general probabilities. Talking about rove that's right in front of us, maybe Rabbi Meir there is not choshesh the miut, and he would let the miut go. The Rishonim here deal with other cases in which Rabbi Meir speaks about this and whether that is consistent within the position of Rabbi Meir. But nevertheless, that would help us understand the differences in their opinions here, that everybody agrees when it's a ruba to eat the kaman, that the miut is as if it doesn't exist. In the case where it's ruba to let the kaman, everybody agrees the miut still exists. The question is, are we choshesh or not? Rabbi Meir says, yes, we're choshesh. Let me say we're not choshesh unless there's something else that we can join together with that miut in order to overcome the rove that is there. So now Gemara says, Mama Yukimto. So you're now establishing that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir. Ema Seifa. What are you going to do with the latter half of the Mishnah? Haitala Chamot. Eino Choshesheth. If she has a mother-in-law, she doesn't have to be choshesheth that the mother-in-law gave birth overseas. Amai. Why not? Haleich achar rov nafshim. Go after the majority of women. Verov nafshim mit abrot v'yoldot. You have a general principle that most married women get pregnant and have children. Number one. miot mapilot. In addition to that, we have a minority of women who have miscarriages. And then besides that, in a birth, if a live and successful birth, the child is 50% chance it's a nekeva, it's a female, 50% chance it's a zachar. Samuch miuta de mapilot de mechsa nekevot. If I take the minority chance that there is a hapala here, that there is a miscarriage, plus the 50% chance that if the baby does succeed and goes to full term, that it's a female, pavlu zacharim miuta. And then the zacharim are the miut. So according to the Rabbanan, I understand why we're not koshesh for the fact that there is a yavam overseas, because that is the miut. That's a minority outcome that there will be a male overseas. Even again, assuming that the rove of women give birth and have children, nevertheless, that's only a 50-50 shot that they have a male. And then on top of that, we have a chance that the woman here miscarried. In that case, if you put the miscarriage chances together with the 50% chance that it's a nekeva, that means that the majority is a case where you will not have someone that is a yavam for this woman. That works well for the chachamim. But v'lechush, for Rabbi Meir, when you have a miut, we are choshesh. And here should be choshesh for the miut, that there's a zachar, there is a yavam overseas. Why does our mistress say, don't worry about it? Mar says, v'lechush dilma gevon din chazka l'shuk lo chayish. Mar says, maybe because when her mother-in-law left, she left not being pregnant, and therefore the chazaka was that she did not have another brother-in-law that would be her yavam. And since that chazaka is now challenged by a miut, we're going to say that the chazaka trumps the miut, or the chashash of the miut, according to Rabbi Meir. Mar says, well, if that's the case, reisha diachazek liyibum tiabim. In the reisha where she has a chazaka, which is that when they left, there were no children in this marriage, and therefore the chazaka would be that she's open for yibum, then why over there do we say that it's overridden by the fact that possibly her co-wife had a child overseas? We just say here that there is a chazaka and the chazaka should dictate. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Arvua, Reisha di Isur Karet, Chashashu. Seva di Isur Lav, Lo Chashashu. Depends on what's at stake here. In the Reisha of the Mishnah, what's at stake here is if we hold by the chazaka that she's open to Yibum, if she performs Yibum and we're wrong, that's an Isur Karet. She's marrying an Eshadach Shalob and Makom Mitzvah. On the other hand, when it comes to the case in the Seifa, where we say she's a chazaka that she's Muteret Lashuk, over there, if we follow that chazakam, we're wrong. At worst, all she did was violate a law, which is that she's not allowed to be into an each zar, that she's not allowed to be at a foreign party until she gets chalitza. We can actually rectify it after the fact and have her get chalitza after the fact, even though the Gemara says that we don't like doing that because darcheh, darcheh noam, and we don't like doing it after the fact. But nevertheless, we can rectify it. It's only an iser law. So maybe that's the differentiation. When the chazakah is going up against karet, we say we're not going to follow the chazaka. But when the chazaka goes up against a lav, we're going to say, all right, let the chazaka stand. Amarova michtei, haidoraita, haidoraita. Where do you ever find such a differentiation? The chiyuv karet involves an isur doraita. The chiyuv lav here also involves a chiyuv doraita. I mean, these are isurim in a Torah. Mali isur karet, mali isur lav. We never have such distinctions within gradations of isurim doraita. It might be when we're dealing with isurim derabanan. Over there, the Rabbanan created different harchokot or gzeirot that revolve around the severity of the isur. And that means that they might, in a case of karet, have a much more severe or extensive, encompassing gzeirot or takanot. By an isur lav, they won't have that. But when we're dealing directly with an isur doraita, we don't find any such differentiation between things that are karet and things that are lav. We look at them all the same, which is that this is a violation of Nisur Doraita, and we're not going to let it go through unless there is reason to do so. If the chazaka is strong enough to overcome the lav, it'll be strong enough to overcome the karet as well. And if it's not strong enough to overcome the karet, it won't be strong enough to overcome the lav, because we're functioning here with dinim deoraita. And the question is, does the chazaka have power to overcome a doraita or not overcome a doraita? It's not about the gradation of the doraita that we're discussing over here. Ela Omar Rava. Rava says that there is a difference here, that the reisha chazaka liyibum ve'ruba l'shuk. Difference between the reisha and the seifa. Because by the reisha you have chazaka liyibum. The chazaka is that she is chayevin in yibum because when everybody left here, there were no children in the marriage. Ve'ruba l'shuk. And on the other side of that, we have a rove that tells us that she should be released to the shuk. The chazaka lo adiv ki ruba. And when you have chazaka against rove, rove trumps. Rove is more important and more stronger than chazaka. And that's why in the reisha we don't allow her to perform yibum with the chazaka, because the rove overcomes that. Va'aiti miyuta de mapilot. And then when you take together with that, the miut, the minority position that they mapilot, that women miscarry, samuch lechazaka, and you join that together with the chazaka, havle palga upalga, then it becomes 50-50, velotina say, velotijabim. Therefore, she can't get married, because maybe she is chayevet in ibum, because of the chazaka plus the miut. On the other hand, velotijabim, she cannot perform ibum over here because of the rove, which is that the rove women go to the shuk. So because of that, she's left in that limbo state, and she has to wait to verify the information or validate what the situation is. Seif, on the other hand, chazaka the shuk. Chazaka is that she is free to go to the shuk because when her mother-in-law left, there was no other yavam. The robe of the shuk, and the robe also pushes her in that direction, because in the robe of the cases, if her mother-in-law did become impregnated, a la robe, it would not produce a yavam, because in cases where her mother-in-law became impregnated, there's a minority chance she miscarried. And then there's a 50-50 shot if she carries to full term that it's a male or a female. If the 50% shot that it's a female plus the minority that it is a miscarriage, if you join those two together, you have a majority of the cases where it's not a yavam that she needs to worry about. If that's the case, now the majority is in her favor and the chazaka is in her favor, and therefore it's a case of miuto de miuta and lo chayish Rabbi Meir. It's a minority of a minority, and you have chazaka plus rove in your favor. And in that case, when it's such a small minority, then Rabbi Meir doesn't worry about it. What the Gemara introduces it here, which is an issue in general, when you deal with rove, there are different types of rove. Rove can be 51 versus 49. Rove can also be 80 versus 20. And the Gemara here is saying that Rabbi Meir will differentiate between something that is a minority that is plausible or something that can happen versus something that's miuta de miuta, which is a remote possibility because you have so much going in favor of saying that there isn't an issue over here, then we won't be choshesh for that small miut, that small occurrence, as to when there is a miut like that. And therefore, there is a differentiation between the reish and the seifa here, even according to Rabbi Meir. That is the simplest way to read the Gemara. That Rova's statement here is upholding what we've established until this point, that our Mishnah is altered by Rabbi Meir, and is explaining why Rabbi Meir could hold like this way in the reish and this way in the seifa, because in the reish, the chazaka goes against his rov. Whereas in the Seifa, the Chazaka goes along with the Rove, and that will overcome the problem of Miuta over here, or make it into a Miuta, and the Miuta is such a small minority that we don't worry about it. Tosafot already asks the question over here, that the Gemara says here that the Chazaka le'ibum v'ruba l'shuk v'chazaka lo adif kiruba, and the Chazaka is not even at the level of a Rove. Tosafot says, according to Rabbi Meir, you could have had Chazaka equal Rove. Even if Chazaka equaled Rove over here, because you put Rabbi Meir's Choshesh in the Miut, even if Rove and Chazaka were equal, the fact that Rabbi Meir's Choshesh in the Miut would push us in a direction which suggests that we can't just follow the Rove in that case of the Reisha. So Tosafot says, Eino Hanami, for Rabbi Meir you could have been equal, El Hamet Omer, that the Gemara here just says the truth, which is that Chazaka is not as strong as Rove. When it comes to a competition between Rove and Chazaka, we will give Rove the benefit of the doubt, even though, meaning here in this situation, Rabbi Meir doesn't need it to be said that way, but that happens to be the truth, that Chazaka is just not as strong as Rove. Rove has much more decisive power than Chazaka. On the other hand, and this is written out much more extensively in the Tosfot Chad Kamai on the Amud Aleph of Kuf Yutet, where he discusses this issue about Rova, and he says that it's not possible to explain Rova as saying that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir. For two reasons, one of which is what Tosfot raised before, the fact that we paskin not like Rabbi Meir, and then why would you establish our Mishnah like Rabbi Meir if we don't paskin like Rabbi Meir, and this is going to make a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Meir. And for a second reason, which is the other question that Tosfot just raised, which he framed slightly differently, which is, why do I need the Chazaka in this picture at all? The Miut itself should be enough for Rabbi Meir to be Choshesh. Therefore, the Tosafot Chad Mikamai, many of the Rishonim over here suggest that Rova's statement is even in the position of the Rabbonon. And in this conclusion here, Rova is saying that the Mishnah is authored not only by Rabbi Meir, but also authored by the Rabbonon, and it's Divrei Hakol. That is based on a Rav Haigon, the Rav Haigon quoted by the Tosafot Chad Mikamai that says, Perish Gamkin de Matnitan Divrei Hakol hi, that our Mishnah is Divrei Hakol, El Rabbonon Svirle, Deruba V'Chazaka Ki Hadade Ninhu. Our Chachamim believe that Rove and Chazaka are equal. Rabbi Meir's Svile, the Chazaka lo adif keruba. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir believes that Chazaka is weaker than a Rove. Umiu, kevan de chayshin in the miuta, but since Rabbi Meir is koshish the miut, samach miut the Chazaka. You take the miut, you put that together with the Chazaka, and that brings it to palgo palgo. And that's why Rabbi Meir can agree in our Mishnah, because of that. In addition to that, the Chachamim, who think that Rov and Chazakah are equal, that's what causes the stalemate in the front half of the Mishnah and the ratio of the Mishnah, because you have Rov against Chazakah, and they think that they are equal. On the other hand, the Tosfot Chavmi Kamai has his own Shita here, which goes along with something that we said before, which is that sometimes the Chachamim, they're not Choshesh the Miut, will agree if you take the Miut together with an existing principle or something else that's there, we might then use the Miut to bolster another position. And that's in this case here. Here you have Chazakah versus Rov. In the case of Chazakah versus Rov, Rov should trump. On the other hand, we know there's a Miut. And this is a case of a Rov Deleta Kaman, a Rov that's not in front of us. And as I mentioned before, even according to the Chachamim, when it's a Rov Deleta Kaman, maybe that's only a Hachra that we go after the Rov. But the Miut still exists. And in a case where the Miut still exists, then you can be Mitzarif that Miut to the Chazakah. And not that we're Choshesh the Miut, but we just use the Miut. It's still in existence. So we put the Miut together with the Chazakah, and now it gives you an even playing field between Miut and Chazakah against the Rov. Therefore, the Chachamim will agree with Rabbi Meir here that we're Choshesh. Choshesh for the Miut. Not because of the Miut itself, but because of the fact that it's joined together with the Chazakah. And that might be a way to explain Rova as authoring this Mishnah, even according to the Chachamim. Because the Chachamim don't disagree fundamentally with Rabbi Meir that the Miut still exists. It's a question of when does the Miut matter. According to Rabbi Meir, the Miut always matters. The Chachamim say, no, the Miut matters when it's mitzarev to another principle like Chazakah, and then it matters. The Tosfot Echad Mekamai has a slightly different take on this, and he says something which is not a muskam lakol in terms of Rishonim, and he says that the Chachamim say that when there's one Miut, they say it's as if it doesn't exist, and it's as if it's wiped out. On the other hand, when you have trei miute, when you have two miutim, then they say that they have the power to still be there and to join together with the chazaka. And he claims that our Mishnah is a case where you have trei miute. You have two miutim in our Mishnah. And that is, one miut is the possibility that the woman would not become pregnant. The second miut is, even if she became pregnant, there's a possibility that she miscarried. And since there are two miutim over here, the chachamim believe that that's a strong enough miut in order to be mitzarev together with the chazaka. If it was one miut, they would say as if it doesn't exist at all. But when there are two miutim, then it's too much, again, for us just to ignore, and therefore we're going to be mitzarif with the chazakah. That's the way the Tosfot Chad Meir Kamai establishes it. But this really turns out to be a machlok between the Ritva and the Rashba when they ask, why doesn't the Gemara over here worry about this miut, the possibility that a woman does not become impregnated? So the Ritva answers and says that's subsumed under the miut, the mapilot. They, under the category of the minority of women who miscarry, is also subsumed in there the miut, the minority of women who just don't become impregnated. And so that's one miut that we have. On the other hand, the Rashba says that it's not right to include that miut. When you're looking at probabilities, you have to look at probabilities that deal with the situation at hand, not from another decision point in the decision tree. Over here, when we're talking about the woman giving birth, once she's pregnant, then we have to have a decision tree. Does she carry to full term? If she does carry to full term, then is it a male or a female? That's all within the same grouping of probability. On the other hand, that miut, the minority that she does not become pregnant, is not part of that decision process. Because the decision process here is only once she has become impregnated, what are the probabilities? The fact that there is a miut that won't become impregnated can't be joined together with this miut over here, and therefore it's a separate decision tree. That's the way the Rashba deals with it. Again, the Ritva says that it's all subsumed together. So Chad Meir Kamai says, actually, there are two miutim here. And we're going to utilize those two miutim to change the nature of the way Chachamim view miut in this situation. Because of the two miutim, they're going to be mitzarif that to the chazukah. On the other hand, I gave the alternative view of how to see this, that Chachamim always believe the miut's there. The question of when it's mitzarif or not might have to do with whether it's the kaman, it's a rova de kaman where the miut doesn't exist, or it's a rutva de leta de kaman where we say the miut does exist. The question of when do we bring up the miut or choshesh the miut is only when it's mitzareif with some other halachic principle like chazakah. Obviously, the Tosfot Echad Meir Kamai and other Rishonim are dealing with other sugyot and shas where there are some difficulties in seeing this differentiation that I'm noting between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir, and that's why they're trying to reconcile with our Gemara over here. The Rabbi Haigon settles it by saying it's a divrei hakol, and says that the difference between the Rabbanon and Rabbi Meir over here is that the Rabbanon believe that Chazakah and Rov are equal, and therefore you have Palgo over here. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir believes that Chazakah is weaker than Rov, but since he's Choshesh for a Miut, it elevates the Chazakah to the level of Rov. But in a case where it's a Miuta de Miuta, it's such a minor probability, he does not use the Miut or Choshesh the Miut to bring it together with the Chazakah. Now we're continuing with the Mishnah. It says, Lo tina seva lo titya beim. She cannot get married and not do yibum. Well, olam amar zi'iri la'atzma shlosha chodoshim. What does it mean, the olam? She has to wait until she gets the information. For herself, she has to wait 3 months. V'chaverta tisha. V'choletze mimonavshach. For her friend, she waits 9 months, and then she can do chalitza mimonavshach. For herself, it's just the issue is a question of whether she's pregnant or not, or whether she can perform yibum or chalitza. She waits 3 months to know whether she is pregnant or not pregnant, and then she can move on to either be released or not be released, depending on what her status is. On the other hand, for her friend that's overseas, that's overseas, she has to wait the 9 month period. The reason that is because chalitza, when her co-wife is pregnant, is not a good chalitza. So if you want to be certain here that she can be free to the shuk, in this situation, either her co-wife overseas gave birth to a child, and that's after 9 months, and that only works once the child is born. So at the birth of the child, she's released. On the other hand, if she never had a child, she can do chalitza. But she can only do chalitza when her co-wife is not pregnant in order for it to be a good chalitza. Therefore, she waits a span of 9 months. And after that 9 month period, she can do chalitza mimonavshach. Because either there was a child born and she's released, or there was no child here and it's post the pregnancy and she can do chalitza to release herself. Again, for herself, if there's a safek about her, when there is no co-wife in the picture, she waits 3 months, like all women do between marriages. The chaverta beolam. For her friend, she has to wait forever. V'tachlotz mimonavshach. Why doesn't she do chalitza mimonavshach like the suggestion of Zeiri? So Abaye bar Avin, Rabbi Chanina bar Avin, Amrei Tarvayu, they both say, Gzera shema yehei vlad ben kayoma. Because the problem is that maybe the child will be a viable child that her co-wife had overseas. And then you require an announcement to say that this woman is kshira the kuna. Because the chalitza that she performed was unnecessary. Since it was an unnecessary chalitza, she can now marry a kohen because she's not psula de kuna, because the chalitza was not necessary. So Mar says, v'litzracha. Okay, so go ahead and make an announcement that she's kshira de kuna. Because dilma ikad havi b'chalitza, v'lo havi b'achraza. Because there's a possibility that they might be people or spectators that were there when she performed the chalitza, but they're not present when they make the announcements. And they're going to come to think, v'amru, kasharu chalutza de kohen. They're going to say that a chalitza is allowed to marry a kohen. So for that reason, we won't let her do chalitza because of this risk that if she didn't need chalitza and then she finds out that she didn't need chalitza, she will then go marry a kohen and it will create a churban mizeh that people will think that a chalitza can marry a kohen. It says, Tanan, a Mishnah from yesterday's daf, Nitan li ben b'medinat hayam. She says, I had a child overseas, v'amra meit mini. And then my child died, v'achar kach bali, and then my husband passed away. Ne'emenet. She's believed in that case because the chazaka when she went out, she was open for yibum. And the birth of the child and the death of the child made no difference to that. So it's a pesha, so pesha hit there. There's no reason to not believe her in that case. Mate bali, v'chakach mate bini. On the other hand, if her husband predeceases the child, in that case, she now changes her status from necessitating yibum when she left to now where she's turamina yibum. Ain't an amenet. In that case, she is not believed. V'choshishim ledvara. Over there, we worry about what she says. V'choletzit v'lo mitya b'emet. And she does chalitza, not yibum. So why over there? Lichush doma atu edim v'amrei kedamra. Wait a minute. Maybe edim will show up and verify and validate what she said. If that's the case, she had a child. She didn't need to do chalitza. So why are we allowing to do chalitza? You have the same problem you have in this situation in our Mishnah, which is if she does chalitza and then we get edud afterwards that corroborate her story, then we are going to have a situation where she didn't need chalitza and she can marry a kohen. Benimtza tam atzuchak rose the kohenah. You have to make an announcement that she is kshira the kohenah. Papa, that case in the Mishnah in the previous parak is bigrusha. That's not even a woman who's already divorced from a previous marriage, and therefore she's not share the kuna anyway, so it makes no difference. Rav Chiya b'Rei Rav Huna Amar, that case is a situation, Bramra, ani v'hu nechbenu b'mara, that we hid out in the cave, and since we hid out in the cave, we're the only two people who know about this. There will be no edim coming, so we don't have to worry about the fact that there will be corroboration of her story, and therefore she will always be psula le kuna. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Yud Tet Amud Bet.